I don't know. Somebody's got a pup. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the September 7th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. At this time, we'd like to ask those in attendance to please keep their videos off and audio muted unless you're presenting information or speaking in public comment. We're offering translation services for our Spanish-speaking attendees. To access translation, please click on the globe at the bottom of your screen and then language. At this time, we'd like to ask if anyone who might need translation would please click on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and raise your hand.
Buenas tardes y bienvenidos a esta junta del Consejo de Educación. Esta junta va a estar siendo interpretada simultáneamente al español, pero necesitamos saber si los presentes necesitan de los servicios, así que si por favor pueden levantar la mano y dejarnos saber si hay alguien en la audiencia que nos necesite. Van a poder acceder a los servicios presionando el globo terráqueo que cuando yo deje de hablar aparecerá en la parte inferior de la pantalla. Gracias.
Great, thank you. The board did meet in closed session. We had three items. We had a conference with our labor negotiators, our agency designated representatives, Dan Block, our Director of Human Resources, and we discussed confidential CSEA, MEC, SEIU, and SLCTA. We also discussed anticipated litigation, significant exposure to litigation, three cases, as well as a personnel item, review, and possible action on employment, dismissal, or discipline of district employees. Is there a consensus on the order of business? Marilyn? Okay, good. Let's move on. We have item number 6.01, student representatives to the board. Mrs. Dawson, are they there with us right now? Yeah, I'm not seeing either of our student representatives, but if they do come on, let me know and we'll circle back to them. Let's move on. Item 6.02. Dr. Prater, this is a presentation on the Los Ranchos program highlights.
Good evening. We're going to kick off with Los Ranchos this evening for our year-long school highlights to the board. I know we feel the same way most board members do, which is this is one of the highlights of the meeting to see what the kids are up to at specific sites. So with that, Mr. McMillan, please take it away.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayfield. Let's see, Mrs. Dawson, can I get screen sharing capabilities? Looks like I have it. Thank you. All righty. I think that I now am sharing my screen. And of course, because Zoom acts the way it does, I can't tell if you can hear me or see my screen. Can someone chime in and say, yes, we see it?
Yes to both of those things. Thanks,
James. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for having me at our board meeting tonight. It's an honor. It's a privilege. My name is James McMillan. I'm the principal of Los Ranchos Elementary, and this is my first year as being principal of Los Ranchos. But as many of you know, I'm returning home. This is where my career in San Luis Coastal started. Doesn't seem like it was too long ago. The word veteran keeps getting thrown my way, and it is just I pulled up my shield and let it bounce off, because boy, do I not feel like I'm that status yet. But I started as a paraeducator here at Los Ranchos many moons ago, and it is fantastic to be back. So I'm really privileged to come and share with you a highlight. And if it's okay, I'm going to throw you a little curveball. Typically, when principals share a highlight such as this, it's usually something that's been done, accomplished. It's tied up with a bow. It happened, right? And we're proud of it. Well, my curveball to you is I'm going to tell you about something that we did do. It's been, what are we on? I think this was day 13. But I'm really going to tell you more about how it's going to lead to something that we are going to do. So any good presenter leaves the audience wanting more, right? So there you go. So it all started back on August 13th of this year, when every instructional leadership team from every site, that's elementary, middle school, and high school, we gathered together for 2 days of professional development. It was fantastic professional development. It was well-timed. The content was absolutely spot on. And the topic was teacher clarity. And we contracted to have a really expert educator, Doug Fisher, present. And as he began on August 13th, he did what all good presenters do and state the case for why we're talking about what we're talking about. And he shared some statistics with the group. And there was a statistic and some research that actually wasn't related at all to teacher clarity, to what he was presenting on. But it spoke to my team and I in a way that kind of just, we couldn't shake it. It really stuck with us, and it seemed to really be something significant that we shouldn't let go and we should focus on immediately, really. So take that and add our district focus this year on social-emotional learning. We're implementing new curriculum in elementary schools. It's the second step, digital curriculum, district-wide common language, teaching pro-social skills. I'm so thrilled to be a part of this. And already many teachers have implemented two lessons out of the whole continuum of the lessons that are presented. And it's really inspiring to see students engaging in activities and using common language. And we're actively teaching behavior, social emotional learning content for the first time, really. Take that and then add our site focus area this year. One of our site focus areas this year, as I met with my leadership team and then my whole staff, was to make sure we welcome and welcome back our students. We all know we're still in the midst of navigating the pandemic. And so we really wanted to put extra effort and emphasis in making sure students feel welcome, so that we can form relationships that are much needed right now, especially, and so that true significant learning can occur. One of my favorite quotes in education is that no significant learning can occur without first having a significant relationship. So that drove us to come up with a plan of how we were going to welcome our new students this year. And we were shocked when we looked at how many new students we had at Los Ranchos this year. I'll tell you about that in a second. In this presentation, I'm going to tell you about what we did, what we're going to do this year, and what we eventually want to do. So you may not know it, but there is a gentleman from, I think he's from Australia or New Zealand, and he's having a profound impact on our district. His name is John Hattie. And, you know, there's two names that have been thrown around in education since I've been in the game, Marzano being one of them. Everyone that's been in the game for a while knows Marzano. Marzano, right? A lot of research, a lot of professional development that has been tried and true over the years. Well, this gentleman, John Hattie, is one of the smartest people that I've ever heard from, and no, I haven't ever met him or seen him in person. But he wrote a book called Visible Learning. And at the time, what he did is he studied a bunch of different smaller research projects and studies, and he tried to synthesize meaning from all that we've been trying to figure out for the past 20 plus years. So it's a meta-analysis, right? And he came up with a system of identifying strategies or things that educators do or schools or school systems do or implement that have either positive, neutral, or negative effects on student achievement. these are some of those things, items, right? And he has since added to his list from that initial, I think, that initial text that he released. At the top here, you can see with the larger bar, that is symbolic of having the highest impact on student achievement possible. It's kind of an ambiguous concept called collective teacher efficacy. And our administrators and some of our teachers have dove into kind of what that means, but that's not what we're here to talk about. As you can see, there are other things that also have positive impacts. Again, the higher the bar, the better the impact. Green, blue, purple, that would be good. Positive impact. Yellow, orange, red on the other side of this axis here, an actual negative impact. Down at the bottom, what has the most negative impact, the greatest negative impact on student achievement is mobility, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute. John Hattie's wife, it seems, didn't like bars and text, and so she created, this is the rumor anyway, I haven't confirmed this, but this is the rumor, she created this barometer of sorts to make it a little bit easier to identify if something has a positive, neutral, or negative effect on student learning. And what Hattie did is he created an algorithm that assigned a numeric value to a strategy or a thing. And 0.4 or above is where you want to live, where districts need to make decisions, where teachers need to spend their time focusing on instruction in the classroom. Anything less than a 0.4 is not going to have more than a year's worth of gain in student achievement. Here are the sections that are better explained. Again, greater than 0.4, that's what he calls the zone of desired effects. Okay, that means that if you do things in this zone, they can result in more than 1 year's growth in 1 year's time of instruction. Between 0.15 and 0.4 are what they call typical or developmental, between 0.0 and 0.4, those are typical things that can occur within a year, even without a lot of teacher effort. And below here in the red, that actually has a negative impact. Professional development, which is where this all started, is in that zone of desired effects with a high score. We do a lot of fantastic professional development in our district. Feedback to students is really high in the realm of having a significant impact on student achievement. Teacher clarity, which is what we focused on this year district-wide, has a 0.75 value, super high. That means that if we can engage and understand what teacher clarity means and encompasses, then we can have students attain more than 1 year's growth in 1 year's time. And then teacher-student relationships are also there, as I mentioned. Now let's take a look at an expanded graph and what is at the bottom of Hattie's list. A negative 0.34, that is moving or shifting schools. So that shocked us. It didn't shock us that it has a negative effect, but that it was the most impactful thing that can negatively affect student achievement. Whoops. So this year at Los Ranchos, would you believe it? We have almost 50, I think it's at 49 last time we truly tried to accurately count, new students in first through sixth grade this year. That's a record for our school. Not since anyone who is working here currently or anyone I could talk to, they have never remembered such a high amount of new to the area, new to the school students. So we knew that we had this research statistic that stuck out to us, and we knew that, you know, students that move, whether it's beginning of the year or mid-year, they do take a hit. It is hard. That is going to impact them. So we wanted to do something about it, Los Ranchos. So we came up with some simple goals, and here they are. We simply want to have any new student on our campus know our campus staff and other students even before they start. We want them to be surrounded with support from day one, and we want them to not suffer academically or emotionally simply by being new. So what we've already done is two exciting things. We had a new student meet and greet prior to the first day of school where we invited any student who was new to the school to come and stop by their teacher's classroom, that teacher work day when they were getting everything ready, and the teachers were really excited. And we had a great turnout. Almost every single new student was able to come to campus. We also had a really, really fun activity last week where we had a new student Roadrunner lunch. I'm going to show you a quick 1-minute video that has some pictures and video from that lunch. And I hope you have time real quick to read this quote from a parent. Essentially, they have done a lot of moving. This parent took time to reach out to me and said, never have they ever felt excited about being new to a school. I think this is exactly why this is something worth focusing on. Here's a quick video from last week's new student Roadrunner lunch.
Peaches.
Favorite fruit?
Strawberries.
Very peaches. Good. Very good.
Strawberries or tomatoes.
Very good.
Passion
fruit. Very good.
Cherries.
Oh, love it. Love it. Tomatoes. Throw to you. Next.
It's the popsicles.
Okay, go ahead and throw the ball to someone else. All right, read it.
Worst job ever.
The worst job ever.
I know.
This could be interesting.
Worst chore at home ever. Oh, no.
So as you can see, we have students from both lower grades and primary grades from all over the place. We have a student who's here from Korea. We have students from out of state. We have students from within the state and then from our surrounding districts. So what we're going to do this year to continue to welcome these new students and then plan for a more robust welcoming of all new students is continue our monthly lunches. We scheduled our next one, and the students that are new get to choose a friend and bring that friend to lunch with them. We're going to participate in the check-in, check-out system of support that our district is implementing with our school counselors with every new student. We're going to tie in our student council members and give them buddy assignments. If you're going to be a student council class representative or officer, you get to have a buddy or more than one buddy that you are in charge of checking in on and making sure feels welcome and knows what to do and where to go. We want to create a passport program with tour guides. Again, our student council can probably act as our tour guides, and we want to create passports that students can go around the campus and get stamps in their passport books when they're new so that they get a true tour and orientation of our campus. We want to do swag bags. We're going to do high quality orientation videos, and we're going to tie in our monthly character traits that we focus on at Los Ranchos to welcoming new students every month, and we'll celebrate that. So that's what we're going to do this year. What we want to do is bigger than that. What we want to do is create a replicable process. We want to make it so that any student new to any school in our district has something that is kind of that it's established, that it's figured out. We would love to share with other sites our successes, but we also want to collaborate with some of the other sites because I know there's some really good ideas out there that I've heard from my colleagues. And then we all, of course, we want to collaborate with our school counselor and our district counselor on special assignment and our MTSS teacher here on site to align the work that we're doing with the SEL, social emotional components of our MTSS district-wide program. Eventually, big picture, Los Ranchos, we would like to be not the first, there already is one in our district, but the second leader in me school. We think that if we were to embark on the leader in me school and the program, that it ties in so well with social emotional learning, and in particular, being leaders, welcoming those that are new to the group. Thank you for your patience. I did go a little long there in the beginning. I'm sorry. I felt like I needed to kind of create the context for what we've done and what we're doing. But school board members, I want to thank you so much. You don't have an easy job, and we so appreciate everything you do for Los Ranchos and every school in our district. I'm happy to answer any questions if anyone has any.
I think Mrs. Sheffer does. Anybody else? We'll start with Mrs. Sheffer.
James, you know, I just wanted to call out, give you a shout out for the welcome video you made at the beginning of the year. It was so heartwarming and wonderful. And my kids are adults now, but they watched it and loved it. And it brought back fond memories for them. But thank you. It was a great video. Thank you for and your staff, too. Please extend my gratitude. It was just lovely.
Thank you so much. I will be happy to share that with them, and thanks for taking the time to watch it.
Great. Anybody else from the board? Well, thanks. Thank you on behalf of the board, too, James. We really appreciate the hard work that you and your staff, and, of course, the staff and the principals at all the schools. It's really interesting that you guys focused on new students, and lo and behold, you got 50 new students. That's a lot of students. That's what, well over 10% of your student population is brand new. And it looks like you're really trying hard to bring those kids in, and it reminds me of how important our work also is with homeless students and just the kind of work we're going to be doing. So I wanted to thank you very much for that. And Eve, I see you have your hand up.
I would, as we go along, James, I'd love to learn more about the zone of desired effects and how that works and how you hit the magic number of getting more than a year's work by being in that special zone. So it looks like a great place for everybody to learn in the district.
Absolutely. I know many of our district leadership are big fans of those zones and are making decisions based on what is shown in those zones. So I think there is more to come.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Dr. Prater?
Yeah, I just noticed that Noah Clausen has joined our meeting.
Yes, we've got Noah here. And actually, I was just going to say again, thank you very much, James. And I do understand that Noah Clausen is here. Noah is our representative from San Luis Obispo High School. Noah, there you are. Are you ready for your report, Noah?
Yeah, I am. Hey, thanks for having me. So at SLO High, we just had our first in-person rally in over a year and a half, which was super awesome for us. We did it out in the practice fields by our brand new pool and our renovated tennis courts. And we had our cheer team and our band perform. It was our largest SLO High band, I think, in a long time. We have 121 members. Wow. So that was super cool, and it kind of brought back a sense of community that we've been lacking for a little while. So that was pretty fun. Our theater program is about to put on their first production of the year. I believe it's Clue, and our fall sports are in full swing. So we're doing well over at SLO High, and we're getting into the 2021-22 school year. So yeah, it's gonna be a fun year.
Great, thank you. Anybody from the board? We look forward to hearing more from you. I'm glad that the year started out well, and it's really nice to be able to be back in school in person. And I'm sure everybody's like masked up and everything like that. We know everybody's trying real hard to stay in school and stay safe. So thanks. Have a good one.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. We would move on to 7.01, which is correspondence. The board did not receive any official correspondence today or this week. So we'll go into public comment. Mrs. Dawson, is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board? I know that we do have one written public comment. So I'm not seeing anyone who wants to address the board. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. We do have someone? Okay. Erica, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you able to see and hear me?
Yes, we are. And Erica, your 3 minutes will start. Hold on just a second. Oh, yeah. You know what? I thank you very much for reminding. Before you get started, Erica, and this does not count against you.
Okay.
I need to read a statement. Thank you for reminding me, Mrs. Sheffer. I was just going to go straight into it. At this point in the agenda, the board welcomes comments on matters of district interest. The board will listen but cannot engage in discussion or take action on items not listed on the agenda. Generally, this section of the agenda is for individuals or a representative of a group to address the board on issues not listed on the agenda. Speakers who wish to discuss items on the agenda are requested to wait until that item comes before the board. However, comments may be given on agenda items at this time if it isn't possible for a speaker to stay until the agenda item is heard by the board. If you submit written comments on a topic, you will not also be allowed to speak on that topic. Comments or correspondence submitted anonymously will not be accepted. If you'd like to speak in person, please complete a yellow public comment card request form and submit it to Mrs. Dawson. In-person public comments will be read first. If you wish to speak via Zoom, click on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and select raise your hand. When your name is called, you may restart your video if you wish and unmute your audio. If you need assistance with your video, please let us know and we'll attempt to fix it. If you have a problem with your audio, please click on the thumbs down icon and we'll also attempt to assist you. Written comments submitted prior to the board meeting will be read by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers following the verbal public comment. All public comments will be limited to 3 minutes, a limit of approximately 450 words in a written comment. You may not cede any remaining time to another speaker. Any portion of your comment extending past the 450-word limit may not be read aloud due to time restrictions. All written comments that are not read into the record will be made part of the meeting minutes, provided that such comments are received prior to the end of the meeting. Please be aware that written public comments, including your name, may become public information. Again, no ceding of time. We ask that other public observers in the room remain respectful and do not interrupt the individual giving public comment, because this is a time for the board to listen, and it's important for us to do so if there are, and it's very difficult for us to do if there are multiple individuals speaking at the same time. As board president, I will maintain order of this meeting and may issue warnings or removal of disruptive individuals. All right, now, that said, Erica, are you ready?
Okay, here we go.
You see the 3 minutes up there?
I do see the 3 minutes.
Okay, perfect. Your 3 minutes will begin now.
Okay, great. And I do apologize. I'm in my vehicle at my son's soccer practice, so it's a handheld device. I just wanted to come. I came to your board meeting last month and provided an update on some things happening at the Caiaphas Elementary School District. And I wanted to come to provide an update of where we're at with those items now. When I came last month and spoke to you, our school board had just passed a resolution entitled Let Them Breathe, which essentially stated that our school go against California Department of Public Health guidelines and allow for masks to be optional and for parents to choose regarding that. That to us was unacceptable. I was able to gather a group of other very concerned parents and community members, and together 117 of us, along with the Caiaphas Teachers Association, signed a letter to request that the Caiaphas Elementary School Board put an item on our agenda for tomorrow night's meeting to rescind this resolution. So fortunately, they were agreeable to our request, and tomorrow at our school board meeting, they will be voting, taking a vote to hopefully vote yes to rescind their passage on August 4th of the Let Them Breathe resolution. We're hopeful that our board will do the right thing. At this point, we've lost a lot of confidence in our school board, and we're hopeful that they're willing to really listen to the community feedback. of the 117 members, as well as the Caiaphas Teachers Association, versus just the feedback of a few parents who don't believe in masking their children. Additionally, as of today, we've had 5 positive COVID cases already at Caiaphas Elementary School of students, including 1 positive COVID case of a teacher. So regardless, obviously we're just very concerned with this whole issue. And we are having cases of kids in our county, and it's just very worrisome to us that this is also happening at our school. So we, again, request that our board take all action to rescind the resolution and guarantee the parents that they are going to do what they need to do to protect our children and school staff. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Erica. Is there anyone else that wishes to address the board at this time? We're not seeing anyone. We do have a written request to speak to the public. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers will read that now.
This is from Rebecca Jules. It has been so exciting to watch the renovation of Morro Bay High School over the past few years. The pool facilities are wonderful, and it is nice to have a community pool back for lap swims and swim lessons. As a community member and Morro Bay High alumni, it's rewarding to see the school come back with the renovations, and especially now with students back on campus. That being said, I am extremely disappointed in the landscape that I've seen so far in front of the science wing. There is so much grass, and it is being watered daily. As you are all aware, California and the Central Coast are in a drought and have been pretty much so for the past decade, with unfortunately no end in sight. Morro Bay High School is watering the lawns daily, all the while both the Morro Bay and Los Osos communities, the community's majority of students reside, have been asked to conserve water. Was drought-tolerant landscape or turf considered? Is gray water being used to water the lawns? It is understandable that athletic fields need to be kept green and in proper shape for the safety of the athletes, and I guess that it takes a considerable amount of water. The new extra grass landscape is strictly aesthetic and is unnecessary and irresponsible for adding to the water usage. Regardless of Morro Bay High School having their very own well, excessive water usage is irresponsible. I strongly encourage the school board and district administration to take a look at further plans for landscape, not only at Morro Bay High School, but San Luis High School, as well as the final stages of construction. Please make environmentally responsible choices for landscapes that will support our schools and community for years to come.
Thank you very much. There is no one else wishing to address the board in public comment, so we'll close public comment. We'll move on to item 8.01, business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, just a quick shout out to the fiscal services team. We have a lot of budget items tonight on the board agenda that we'll be going through, and it's because of them that we're able to do that, right? So I spent a lot of time over the course of the summer getting all the unaudited actuals together, and so we will be presenting that to the board tonight. So thank you to Katie Eklund and the rest of her team.
Great. Okay. 8.02, educational services update. Mrs. Frost.
Thank you. Just a couple of updates from Educational Services. First of all, we're really proud to let the board know that all K-6 elementary teachers have received an entry task lesson created by our iInnovate team. So our iInnovate team in action, every teacher has a lesson. It integrates hands-on learning. It looks at coding and collaboration this month, and they will be using equipment from the lab. So we love this as a start for our iInnovate labs and getting teachers and students in there. In terms of MTSS, or multi-tiered systems of support, we had 32 openings for elementary academic intervention teachers, and they have all been filled. So that is Laura Storm and her team working really hard to pull in qualified, talented teachers to help us out. So the academic intervention teachers and our MTSS teachers are going to work together to support our students who might be struggling a little bit in our elementary classrooms. They've all been trained. They went through 2 days of training, and they looked really seriously at Tier 2 literacy intervention. So again, that will be moving forward in the next couple of weeks, but we've got trained, highly qualified staff, and we're really happy to report that. And then finally, COVID safety and prevention continues to be a critical focus as we move forward in our year. Our staff is really working diligently to make sure we have safety protocols in place. while also teaching our children full-time every day. Holly Warwick is our workplace infection coordinator. I know you guys have heard from her before. She and I are going to have a parent forum next week, just giving our parents an opportunity via Zoom to hear from Holly and I and ask open questions about anything COVID-related, safety we have in the classroom, our COVID plan, and definitely quarantining will be one of our primary topics during that conversation. So we'll let you know when that's coming up. And that's it from Ed Services.
Okay, great. Dr. Eisenrath Rogers has a question.
I just want to clarify that the innovation labs are made possible by the donations that are made by our community to our San Luis Coastal Education Foundation. And so that's going to put
exactly
that in
right.
there.
Thank you. Yes.
All donations are welcome.
Perfect.
Thank you. All right. Back to you, Mr. Pinkerton, Measure D update.
So, yeah, just a really quick, the CBOC, our Citizens Bond Oversight Committee, will be meeting in 2 weeks. So I sent out the invitations for our next meeting. I'll be reviewing much of what I reviewed with the school board on one of our recent study sessions. And tonight, you'll see later on the agenda, we're excited to bring the GMP for the A building at Morro Bay High School, which is the theater, cafeteria, drama room, choir. Just excited to kind of get that, all the demo, those types of things are done, but ready to get that construction started on that building tonight.
Great. Thank you. All right. Questions for Mr. Pinkerton on Measure D? Okay. Let's go to 9.01, resolution number 02122, GAN limit calculations for 2020-2021 and estimated calculations for 2021-2022. Mr. Pinkerton.
So, you know, the board's listened to me for years, try to get this GAN limit right, Julie Lang. So we're going to see if Katie Eklund can actually pull something off and try to explain what the GAN limit resolution really is, right?
Hi, Katie.
Hi, how are you? Okay, so we're going to try to do this. So every year you have to approve the GAN limit. It was a proposition passed in 1979. And its intent was to constrain the growth in state and local government. And the way they do that is by linking the year-to-year change in expenditures, the changes in inflation, by population, which in a school district represents the ADA. So we have our SAC software that does a calculation. It takes our prior year limit that was calculated the year before. It looks at our change in ADA and comes up with a per capita income. And luckily this year we were under our GAN limit. If you're above your GAN limit, based on that calculation, then the state will ask you to do an adjustment. If that happens year after year, then they would ask the board to pass a resolution to adjust our GAN limit. But we are not in that situation currently. But that is a quick overview of what the GAN limit is. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them for you.
Okay. First of all, let's go to the public on this item. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item? If you do, again, you would have 3 minutes. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any board member who has questions or comments on this? I'm not seeing anyone. Would someone like to make a motion to approve resolution 2021-22 GAN limit calculations?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I'd like to make a motion to approve the proposed resolution. And I want to thank Katie for spending some time with me today trying to grasp the GAN limit and to go over some of the details. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I'll make that motion.
Okay, Mark made the motion. Mrs. Frame, second. Okay, any further comments or discussion? Seeing none. Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew? Dr. Eisenrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. Item number 10.01, MTSS update, social emotional learning focus. This will be Mrs. Gould. This is a discussion item. Mrs. Gould.
Good evening, everyone. Give me just a moment while I share my screen. There we go. Thanks for your patience. Okay, we should be good to go. Good evening, everyone. I'm Janet Gould. I'm your Executive Director of Student Support Services. And joining me in this presentation tonight was to be Shelly Benson and Angela Riles. Shelly is our district lead counselor who, as you know, has been filling in for a need at SLO High since middle of August or early August. And she is actually at home nursing a pretty bad ear infection this evening. So she helped me with the presentation, but she won't be able to join me this evening. I do have Angela Riles, who is joining us virtually, and Angela will be sharing out this evening. Angela is one of our school counselors and has been an invaluable source of support as well while we haven't had Shelly for the last month.
Wasn't Ms. Riles one of the teachers, one of the staff members of the year last year?
I believe she was.
And was she not also the counselor at Del Mar Elementary School?
I know she was. Yes, she was. Angela's amazing. We're really lucky to have her in our district.
We'd like to acknowledge your service to the district, Angela. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, tonight we are here to do a welcome back from the lens of SEL or social emotional learning. And when we're talking about social emotional learning, we're talking about the process through which students acquire and effectively apply the knowledge, skills, and attitudes that help them to understand themselves, connect with others, achieve goals, and support our communities. It includes learning in environments where students feel safe, valued, and a sense of belonging. Tonight, we're going to be sharing both the things that we are doing to support students with social emotional learning, as well as how we're supporting the social, mental, and behavioral health of our students. I have this slide in here because this was information that came out from the U.S. Department of Education, and they had three different landmarks for what it looked like in a return to school. And the first one was providing for the safety of all students and staff. The second one looked at building school communities. And the third one had to do with accelerating learning. And as I looked through this, I was really proud of our district and the work that we've already started and the work that we have planned for this year. Because this slide talks about the importance of assessing the needs of students. And tonight you'll hear a little bit about what we're doing in that area. It talks about investing in effective strategies to address needs. It talks about ensuring we have school counselors and other health professionals at our schools to support them. Ensuring in restorative, equitable, and inclusive practices to school discipline. And then also providing opportunities to build our school communities. And we're doing those things. So when our students returned, we were ready. We are ready to support them in rebuilding their sense of school community, where students do feel safe, valued, and have a sense of belonging. You already heard from James McMillan this evening and some of the work that's happening at Los Ranchos. You heard the San Luis High School student point out the importance of rebuilding that sense of community and having the chance to do that. And Angela is going to share with you this evening some of the other things that are happening across our district. So it took some work in getting ready and a lot of effort into that from a lot of people. And we looked at the support that we had in our district and we made some increases. So at a couple of our elementary schools, Hawthorne and Petrenko, they each have an additional half day counselor this year. At Baywood, Smith, and Monarch Grove, we increased support by providing them with a counseling aide. Our family advocates have been so valuable in the works that we've done across our district, and we've increased our family advocate support. Over the last couple of years, we've had therapists who actually come onto campus and support students weekly in meeting their mental health need. And we've been able to increase that support that we have available to our students this year. We also, through some of the mom money that we have allocated a 0.4 FTE, who is our school, one of our school nurses, who's going to be supporting trauma-informed practices and helping develop awareness around trauma-informed practices and learning across our district. Throughout the summer, there were many opportunities for professional development. We had the Kickstart conference that I know you're all aware of that was the first week in August. And during that, there were multiple sessions that focused on social emotional learning and were well attended by our staff. And we received a lot of positive feedback on those sessions. We had a new administrator institute in July, and we included a presentation on social emotional learning at that institute. Different staffs have been doing a variety of planning this summer and professional development days where we've started to roll out Second Step, which Angela will talk to you about in a little bit. Different sites have had SEL-focused site goals, such as what you heard about Los Ros Ranchos, and you'll hear about a couple others. Rebound that we had in August really infused SEL learning throughout. And I think most importantly, as we were at the end of last year and we were looking at starting this year and we were thinking like, man, is it okay for us to take some time at the beginning of the year, like not to start with academics right away, but to take some time to make sure that we're building back those welcoming communities. And what was really amazing was like, not only like, yeah, we weren't only given the permission to do it, but it was really the expectation that our schools would start the year with a focus on community building, relationships, and wellness. Okay, Angela, I'm turning it over to you.
Thank you, trustees and everybody in the audience. We really appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to all the important work we've done. And as James pointed out and Janet has pointed out today, one big step that we took as we were looking at this journey of social emotional learning and what our students were going to need upon return was really upgrading and expanding our Tier 1 universal support of social emotional learning curriculum. So our district has been teaching the Second Step curriculum in our elementary schools for several years, but Committee for Children, which is the sister company of Second Step, has upgraded their program to be digital, much more user-friendly, more modern, and engaging for kids, along with extending that program to be a K-8 program. And so one commitment we have made and began the process of is rolling that out to all of our students, kinder through eighth grade in our district. We purchased the digital program on a 3-year contract, and we've started the 3-year rollout plan. And if you don't know a lot about Second Step, the program is really focused on, again, it's a social emotional learning program that's well researched, highly acclaimed, highly reviewed across the country among many districts and schools. And it is a program that teaches our students some of the real universal needs for social emotional learning, focused on problem solving, anger management, empathy, kindness, those kinds of things. And that program is now being rolled out across all of our schools. We started off with kickoff presentations to all of our teachers. As school started, our school counselors are really taking a supportive role in making sure that teachers feel supported and have everything that they need to make sure that those lessons are happening weekly in classrooms. And our student support team is also following up with teacher training and opportunities to expand the learning across all of the classroom setting and also the school environment setting. So that's our real big push in a Tier 1 intervention. And as I know everybody on this meeting has been hearing about the multi-tiered systems of support, that Tier 1 intervention is really our universal support for all students in our classroom. And the other universal support that we really wanted to make sure that all students had upon returning to school, as Janet shared, was this idea of rebuilding and reconnecting our students to the school community and to the importance of that community. So I'm going to share with you the next few slides, so just a small handful of some of the things being done at schools across our district to welcome kids back and to really meet that expectation and the charge that was made by the district to push academics aside for just a moment to really take that time to rebuild the relationship that our students need. Now, as was pointed out, I am the Del Mar Elementary Counselor, so I put us first. We really took that charge at Del Mar. Social emotional learning is such an important part of all of our schools, and for us at Del Mar, we really embraced it by developing what we called wellness days. We took the first 7 days of school and created wellness themes for each day. And then in order to really support the teachers teaching around that wellness relationship and community building, we provided them with this kind of wide range of activities that fell into different buckets for them to teach. We encouraged them to take this, to move, to copy it, use what they wanted, add in their own, of course, teacher voice and environment needs. But we really, really committed to this idea of wellness for the first 7 days of school. And as we move through to the other slides, Janet, you can move forward. We can see that we did that district-wide, right? Anybody that was on our campuses the first week or two saw that there was a real commitment to student need, to student community. Slope High School welcomed back all of their students that were brand new, whether that be freshmen, whether that be new to the community, whether that be they did not attend school last year due to being on distance learning. Over 275 students joined them at Slope High School for their link crew orientation prior to school starting. Also, as our high schools do and as our representative shared, that idea and that sense of school spirit, music at lunch and arrival, photo booths, outdoor fall rally. We know that our high school students are just so happy to be back together and be redeveloping that sense of community among their schools. And then we look at another one of our elementary schools, Bishop's Peak here. They really just welcomed everybody with excitement and with this sense of, you know, almost like a party atmosphere. We're back together. We're developing relationships once again in a way that's been missing for a while. And so you can see there were balloons and people were welcoming with chalk names in front. And I just had to include this picture because the first day feels, what counselor doesn't love that? That is a real example of what our schools are looking at and the kinds of language and communication and activities that are happening in our classrooms right now, talking about feelings, where people are at, what kids need. So there's just another example from Bishop's Peak. And then we hop up to some more of our secondary schools over at Pack Beach. Principal Dowler spent some time with his kids doing team building and back-to-school kickoff activities that really gave those students a sense of belonging and a sense of connectedness with each other after being away from that typical school environment for so long. And I loved this photo. I took it off of Loam's' Twitter account. They had a class meeting day one. The class meetings are such a big integral part of social emotional learning programs and the idea of students having their own voice in a classroom. And this is day one where a teacher is leading them and the opportunity for them to share how they're feeling and feeling connected with other students. So you can see as we move across all of our schools, again, this is just a small sample, that welcoming back, that sense of that sense of relationship, that sense of wellness and community has been at the forefront of everybody's thinking. And just to touch on a couple more meaningful back-to-school activities that we had, our school counselors initiated and ran the first ever orientation for our school site therapists. As Janet shared with us, we've really increased the amount of time that our contracted site therapists are on our campuses, and we have really increased the number of students that they have access to. And for the first time ever, we initiated an orientation, laid out expectations, really opened that communication between our counselors and our therapists so that we can get the most benefit from that relationship with our therapist, and we know so many of our students need it. So it was a great kickoff and initial welcome as we move into that program for the year. As James pointed out, we're rolling out a new Tier 2 intervention called Check In, Check Out through our school counselors, through our MTSS teachers and instructional aides, and those rollout presentations have started and will continue to happen through all of our, you know, stakeholders and important groups of people that will be working with that program. And lastly, you know, working in San Luis Coastal, as you know, is really a gift. And we share here a photo from one of our elementary teachers here who shared the love on Facebook and let us all know how excited and proud she was to work in a district where, from the superintendent through our entire organization, self-care and wellness and balance is a priority. We know that our staff, even though we're back to normal, it is very, very far from normal. And our students are seeing the needs, are feeling the needs of our staff. And so the importance of having that balance and our staff taking care of ourselves will continue to be a priority for us as we move through the year. So that's, again, just a little taste of some of that social emotional support that we've infused district-wide, K-12, in these first few weeks of school.
And we definitely have continued work to do. Last year, the board approved a district lead school counselor, Shelley Benson, who began, worked about 7 months last year. And so we're looking forward to continuing to develop her role and implementation of SEL and supports throughout our district. SABRES and My SABRES is a assessment or a universal screener for students that helps us to identify students who may be in need of additional areas of support. The nice thing is sometimes those externalizers, we see them, we know that they need help, but the internalizers sometimes can slip through the cracks. And this screener, we believe, will be a source of support in that area. We talked about our therapist tool starting, and we'll be continuing throughout the year. Our school nurse will continue to do professional development in trauma-informed care and practices. Both Shelley and Grace are looking at wellness for staff and putting together a Google Classroom where staff can subscribe to that will send out updates and just reminders to take care of yourself and focus on wellness. Shelley worked on last year with our school counselors a comprehensive K-12 school counseling calendar that will be implemented this year. We talked a little bit about check-in, check-out as a Tier 2 intervention, starting with elementary school at first and hopefully moving on up the grade levels. And then we started care teams at our schools last year, collaborative, affirm, restore, and educate. And we are continuing those care teams on in through the year. So finally, this was how our Rebound PD ended with the shine theory, the idea that our staff can shine when we provide them with supports and resources for self-care. Our students will be given the tools to shine when we provide them what they need academically, emotionally, socially, and behaviorally. Our school community will shine as we rebuild our learning environments where students feel safe, valued, and a sense of belonging. So thank you for hearing about our SEL welcome back this evening.
Mrs. Dawson, is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this? See no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there anybody from the board that has comments? Mrs. Frame?
Okay, I just wanted to thank Mrs. Gold because for your endemly and quick response. I sent you an email and you got right back and I really appreciate that. And what you really identified for me was kind of even within the short time, the trends we're seeing across our sites, across grade levels, and really brought to bear really the need for this work that we're doing. So I appreciate your response getting back to me and also the work that this that we're doing in the district, because per your response, it's really important that we get a handle on where our students are now in order for them to, you know, continue to grow and have a great year. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman, did you have a comment?
Yes, please. Thanks. First of all, I know these questions may be better answered by Shelley, and I'm sorry she's not here, and I hope she's feeling better. Earaches are not fun. I see a lot in the presentation on K-8, and I'm a little concerned about the 9th through 12 high schools. So one of the things I saw was there was a outreach to 275 students at San Luis High, and kind of see a lot being done to outreach to the elementary. What kind of stuff was done at the high school for the other everybody? I mean, was there some outreach to everybody?
I know that the 275 were for all new students. So it was the new freshmen and the new students coming back. I don't have specifics about some of the other things. What I can tell you is that that is an area that Shelley is working on this year. It's incorporated into the K-12 counselor calendar that they'll be rolling out this year. But some of the plans changed a bit with us not having access to Shelley at the beginning of the year. But what I can tell you is I know that all of the sites were committed to creating welcoming environments for students being back on their campus.
And from my experience in some of the schools I worked in and some of the districts, there was usually when this kind of outreach was made in elementary and in K-12, we were a little worried about triggering reactions in some students. Was there a staff set aside? Was there a plan in place in case kids, is that part of MTSS? Is there a quick response team, I guess?
Our staff are well-trained. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question correctly. Our staff are well-trained to support needs that are identified, and we're continuing to build and develop the different responses that we have when needs are identified.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate it.
Other questions or comments from board members?
Oh, I'm sorry. I did have one other question.
I'm sorry, Mark.
And it looks like there's going to be a lot of focus in the near future on staff. And so there'll be like how I feel type, fill it out form that they can do, and that'll go to somebody. Similar to your comment about the introverts and the extroverts.
Right. And that's something that we need to look at and discuss. And it's something that we did last year with staff, kind of reaching out in different surveys to kind of get the pulse of our staff. And it's something that we are, you know, relying on our principals. And, you know, I definitely can see us reaching out to staff and asking those types of questions as well.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome, of course. Anyone else? Well, thank you, Janet. We really appreciate all the work that you and your team, and actually, again, all the school sites have done, and
definitely
really the focus on social-emotional learning, getting kids back to school, getting kids feeling safe in school, understanding that last year was a tough year and tougher than we'll ever know for a lot of our students. So this is something I know that our board has valued throughout, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely.
So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Item 10.02, SLC-USD equity update. Mr. Mayfield.
Yes. Let me see where, bring this presentation up. Give me 1 second.
Oh, wait. Before we start, Rick, before we start,
please.
I need to find out, is there anybody who continues to need Spanish translation? If you'd please raise your hand, use your Zoom to raise your hand. We'd appreciate that. Okay, thank you very much. Go ahead, Mr. Mayfield.
Yeah, thank you. As all of you know, it's been a board goal to take a look at things through an equity lens in all the decisions that we make academically, administratively, for the benefit of students. And we've been actively engaged in this work over the last 3 years. This would be year 4. And, of course, we were engaged in it before. But there's really been a focus, I would say, over the last 3 years and beginning this year as well. And we've come a long way in the 3 years. And, you know, you could, in front of you here is our working definition of equity. You could spend 6 weeks or probably a year with the committee coming up with a definition for equity. But basically, it's doing whatever needs to be done to remove obstacles to help students be successful academically and in their lives. And there's no barriers to that, whatever needs to be done. Every single department in our district, the conversations are, what do we need to do to help kids to be successful? It's occurring at the cabinet level and HR, in transportation and food service. You hear a lot of the stories here at these meetings and in your work around the district. there have been a lot of people. Please.
Right. Still need to make this.
Okay, thank you. And in technology, it's happening as well. a lot of people have been instrumental in this work. And as I said, all across the district, we're having these discussions. But Dawn Addis and Chelsea Smiley have been especially helpful in helping to run the District Equity Committee, and they're going to share a little bit about that work with us tonight. Dawn.
So as the board knows, last year we started working on the equity roadmap. And in building on the definition of equity, we really thought about the responsibility that San Luis Coastal has, as well as the opportunity to affirm and support every student's potential. So the equity roadmap is really grounded both in the definition that Rick shared with you, as well as this idea of responsibility and opportunity. So we will be coming back to this roadmap over and over across this year to guide the work of San Luis Coastal, but also to guide specifically what the equity leadership team digs into. And we really decided that there's three high impact areas that we shared with the board last year, but we love the one pager that we came up with, and so wanted to get it in front of you again. And if you can move forward, please, Mandy. Those three high impact areas are around academics, and as Rick just said, eliminating barriers, leveraging the power of teachers, shaping an inclusive worldview, student well-being, which you just heard quite a bit about on the SEL presentation, and then personnel, recruiting, hiring, creating welcoming environments, and training staff. And so as we go through as a leadership team this year, we'll be focusing on these three areas. And so I'm going to turn it over to Chelsea, and she's going to tell you a little bit about, or maybe back to Rick, what's happened so far, and then to Chelsea, who will tell you about this year.
And most of the time you've heard about these groups and areas kind of separately in presentations, but our advisory groups are the Superintendent's Student Senate, which is an amazing group, the Common Ground Advisory Task Force, and of course the District Equity Team. In terms of professional learning, we've conducted an Equity Institute over the last 4 years, and we'll do so again this year. We've conducted 2 times gender spectrum training, bystander and upstander training, culturally responsive practice, and then the sites have conducted individual site work with a focus particular to that site as well. We've also reached out to our community and had partnerships with Cuesta College in the 21-day Racial Equity and Social Justice Challenge, as well as a parent presentation with Raise Up SLO. And then in terms of student access and support, of course, our MTSS initiative through the use of data, lasering in on exactly which kids need the greatest amount of support. Our summer experience program, as you heard last meeting, more robust than ever, and that's only going to grow with the work that Jeff Martin is doing now, along with Debbie Blow, to prepare for this coming summer. Transportation, our food services department really stepped up recently, and then, of course, one-to-one devices for all of our students. And now Chelsea will share a little bit about professional learning that's occurred recently.
So in our personnel area, we wanted to highlight again, because you've heard about this before, the K-12 launch to our school year, but this time with an equity lens. And because of prior conversations that were had with both Doug Fisher and Nancy Fry, their presentations had an embedded EL focus, so focus on English learners. Our Kickstart conference, on the other hand, was absolutely putting out invitations to teachers. What do you want to present? And I'm not sure if you saw the titles that were presented, but these are the titles that we pulled out for you to highlight that were related to equity. And we grouped them so that you could see the common topics. And they included, as you've heard earlier from Angela, social emotional learning, also gender spectrum, equity in San Luis Coastal, AVID, ELD strategies, and culturally responsive practices.
Okay, so what are we up to this year? As Chelsea mentioned, the Kickstart Conference it was very well received as a before-school paid event. All new teachers were invited and encouraged to attend. They were given a set course of workshops to attend to help them prepare for the new school year. We'll do an equity leadership team member from each site. So that member will be able to take back important initiatives occurring around the district and participate on behalf of the site. We're in discussions with Franklin Covey, which does Leader in Me schools training to help us with anti-bias and educational equity training and try to get to more of our classified employees. The Common Ground Advisory Task Force, of course, will meet this year and bring back recommendations to the board. The Student Senate also develops site goals, which oftentimes are equity-based, and those are included in their SPSAs. Each site will have an SPSA equity goal, and those will come in front of the board at the first November meeting, and you'll be able to review those. In our HR department, recruitment and retention process, we continue to look at that and ways that we can improve that in terms of hiring a diverse workforce. We have a new website rolling out in the near future, and the ISLA section of that website will have information, comprehensive information on all the equity work that's been conducted around the district over the last few years. And then the last thing tonight, we wanted to just share with you, kind of put a spotlight on some work we're doing at Los Osos Middle School. Principal Carl Bloom has been very active with his site at looking at their classrooms through an equity lens. And so we're working with Sandra Saruf and Pedro Arroyo from Cultural Creations, and they're going to share a little bit about the work that they're doing at Los Osos Middle School now. Sandra and Pedro.
Hi, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Hi, thanks for having us. We're excited to be here and supporting the equity goals that the district has. My name is Sandra Saruf.
And I'm Pedro Arroyo.
And we know we have 5 minutes, so we're not going to talk about us. You can learn more about us and our organization at the Cultural Creation website, but we want to launch in and talk about the work that's going to be happening at LOMS to build equity and inclusion. So equity and working towards achieving equity is a process. It's never a one and done. It takes time. It takes commitment. It takes acknowledging where the inequities lie, how they show up, our place in it, and then taking the steps to shift that. So we are beginning this process and this journey with the LOM staff. Next slide. Next slide, please.
Why we're here, and if we can go through all the bullet points, please, that would be great. So part of the work ahead is we want to work with the site to expand the equity lens of the entire staff and really with the goal to support students. We also recognize that we need to build the capacity to have some of the difficult conversations that need to be had when we speak with regards to equity and inclusion, and then also being able to build that environment of belonging, a trust and healing, not only for the students, but for the adults, and the focus and the goals really align with some of the specific equity goals that the district has identified. Next. We came up with some starting values that we feel help us to do this work. So we want to just share these with you briefly, and in particular, that last bullet point that speaks to kind of role and responsibilities when it comes to building an equitable and inclusive classroom. It really applies to the entire school staff. Next.
There's always room to learn or grow. And one of our starting values is that we all want to do well. We all believe in diversity, and we're here to create the space to have those conversations. And And to shift, we need to expand our lens, right? We have been conditioned. We have our norms. We have the way we do things. So when we're going to unpack equity and specifically educational equity through a racial equity lens, we're going to offer the tools and guidance on how to expand that lens, how to expand the narrative. How can we begin to unpack and shift and change through this lens? Next slide, please. So an overview of the program for the year. We're going to have a total of 8 hours of professional development with teachers, as well as some equity coaching and leadership development with the leadership team and admin. We did our two-hour kickoff the week before school started, and we're actually going to have our next session tomorrow. The way we do this is that the trainings are scaffolded and customized to meet teachers and participants where they're at in the process. It's a collective process for us to move along together, to unpack, to understand, to discuss, to reflect. The way we do these workshops, we are providing information, but they're also interactive and experiential. The activities are designed for us to begin to unpack and explore bias, to explore isms, to explore how they show up for us and how they show up for our students. And in this work, as we unpack educational equity, we do center race, identity, and bias. Next slide, please.
Our framework. So again, we do want to spend some time building trust within the sites to build the capacity to engage in the challenging conversations. And we really want our colleagues to look at the things that we bring to the table, how they impact us, how they inform us, and then how those things show up in the classroom. We want to spend some time also looking at data. We want to look at policies and practices, because we know that when we focus on these two points, that's when we're able to kind of see the changes and the growth that we want in our students and then in our community. And then also simply being able to name how the inequities show up. Because if we can't see things, we can't name them. And also if we can't name them, we can't change them. And then that last piece is around that action planning. So at the end of our cycle, we do want to ask, our site's leaders to identify that particular practice or practice that they want to focus on in the coming year. I mean, some of the feedback we did, a quick survey of our colleagues in the room after our first session, and one of the major requests was the need for additional time to kind of have the deeper discussions. So we wanted to kind of highlight that. I think folks are really appreciative of the content and the way in which we engaged these topics, but that was one of the big takeaways, is the need for more time. Next.
Yeah. And the next slide. So we're not going to read all the teacher feedback, but we left it here for you all to be able to review and to see and to understand how valuable this work is through their perspective at this point in the process. And next slide, please. We did do a pre-assessment, and some of the three major takeaways when we asked, what would you like to get out of these trainings? These were the top three. Being more aware of our own biases and practices and how to shift it. And that is exactly what we are going to be building the capacity to do with the teachers at Loans. Tools on how to have these discussions. We'll be touching on that. You know, everybody feels like they're walking on eggshells. Am I saying the right thing? I don't want to offend anybody. What's right? What's wrong? And what do I do? So we're going to be able to create that space to have those conversations, which will hopefully inform the external processes of bringing that work outwards into the classrooms as well. And then, of course, creating inclusive and educational spaces of belonging. And so we just love this pictograph. Equity is a choice. The district is making the choice, and we're here to support that process. And we're grateful for that. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe Carl Bloom is with us as well. Carl, is there anything you'd like to add as to how this has gone?
Well, no. We kicked off before school started, and we had an amazing two-hour session with Sandra and Pedro, and I know that our staff was very vested in the whole process. And like Sandra said, we're having our next session tomorrow, and we're excited about it. I think this is going to be an amazing process for loans, and encourage any site in the district to take them up on this. This is a great gift that we have this year to be able to go down this road and kind of look at ourselves and then ideally, right, put this for the kids, which is what we're doing this for. So it's good stuff.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board might have.
Let me first see if there's anybody from the public that would like to talk to us about that. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Eve.
Sure. This sounds like a wonderful, innovative program, and it's certainly something that is very new in our district, and I'm very excited about learning more about it. I was wondering if there is a list of books and experts that would be used in the program that could be made available so we'd know. Maybe we could do our own as a board, or staff could do our own self-education on this topic, and I would be excited to do that and get more familiar with it.
Absolutely. I'd love to have that discussion with you and share some of those resources.
One other thing about that is that, I think I'll save it. I'll save my question for another time.
Thank you.
Other comments from board members? Evelyn? I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm missing the cue here.
No, sorry. One of the things, Mr. Mayfield, and when I was looking at this and the equity roadmap, and one thing that struck out at me for the academics, eliminate barriers. But as I was reading through this, and, you know, to eliminate barriers, we have to identify them. So I was wondering if we have an idea of what, you know, district, what those are, and then, you know, a kind of a progress on, you know, what, I guess, you know, what those are. So what are the districts, what are the barriers we have as a district for academic achievement is what I'm reading into that. And then how do we, you know, monitor that we're on track and that we're, sure, you know, moving that bar.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Great question. You know, I would say it's an ongoing process. Some of them are more obvious, things like transportation, one-to-one technology, providing hotspots, now being able to provide free lunch to, you know, all students. But then, you know, others are a little bit more difficult, like, you know, how do we increase the number of students from SED groups, EL, RFEP groups that are taking AP courses, you know, at the college level? How do we increase the number of those students who are prepared, A to G ready, and to go on to college? And I would say it's an ongoing process of looking at that. But all of our conversations are focused on those things when we talk about student achievement. Like, what are the barriers, and how do we eliminate these to allow students to access rigorous curriculum and be successful at it?
Well, you know, as you were talking, because that made a lot of sense to me, I'm wondering, is there, of course, you know, sites will be developing their own, but will there be kind of overarching kind of, I guess that's what I'm looking for, that kind of overarching goal for, you know, eliminating those common barriers that, and I don't know what they are, and I know we're really focused and really looking at that. So it's part of that intentionality, and you know, I don't have any idea, but it would be, at least for me, some clarity would be, you know, identifying what those are and then what that plan is
certainly
as part of that process.
I think you'll see it in the SPSAs when we present those in early November. I think you'll see it in the MTSS process and how we're using data to identify the students that most need our support. And again, all the conversations are, what is holding these kids back? Why aren't they successful? And what else do we need to do? I think we're looking at our grading policies. We're looking at our homework practice. and making the adjustments necessary to help students to be successful academically.
Thanks.
Keith?
Notice in your write-up that this is all based on the best practices of the ACSA, which is the Association of California School Administrators Equity Project. I was wondering what metrics and this, how did you decide on them? When I went on the website, it looked very, you know, it looked like it had a lot of groundedness to it rather than some of the more strident parts of people that are asking for equity. Mm-hmm. So I thought it looked really good and balanced and well-founded. I think Dr. Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of a Highly Effective People, is part of this program.
Yes.
All these things are tried and true. They just didn't pop up in the past 2 years.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you know, as a district, those are the kinds of practices that, you know, we're always doing, looking for vetted, research-based, solid organizations to guide our work.
I applaud that.
I have a question for Mr. Bloom. So, Carl, one of the things that I know your school is focusing heavily on is Schools to Watch and continuing with the Schools to Watch program. And I'm curious how this program dovetails with and supports your efforts in Schools to Watch and what we can expect to see as we, you know, as perhaps without the benefit of having Laguna here, it would be interesting to hear how your learnings may possibly be applicable to what we're trying to do throughout the school district.
Well, thanks, Chris. And that's a great question. And I think it, I don't have my slide with me here, but, I really looked at what the district's goals or the board priorities were first for the year. And we looked at the district, the new district mission and vision. And we then, I kind of, if you can envision like a reverse pyramid, right? So up the top of the board priorities and the district mission and vision. And then we looked at some other things that are going to drive us this year. Some of them were our self-ratings and Schools to Watch. Some of them were our superintendent senate's goals, the three main goals that they had. And it came down to creating these goals for LOMS, of which we kind of created three. And one of them was that students wanted a place where their voices could be heard no matter what their backgrounds were. And that came kind of from the superintendent senate. It blends right into the equity goals of the district. And it was very interesting to see how all of these components that we use to create LOMS goals were all very integrated and tied into one another. And it's no coincidence, right? Like we're moving in this direction. Schools to Watch is a self-ranking, and one of the areas that our staff felt they could do better was in understanding equity and areas for growth there. So it really lends itself into what we're doing. And again, it's like it's this upside down pyramid to focus on the LOMS goals, but all of these other separate subsets of goals are all tied together, which is awesome. So I'll share with you the slide that I used with my staff to kind of illustrate this. And I think that kind of really shows how all of the superintendent senate work, Schools to Watch work, is tied to equity work, is tied to board's mission and vision or the district's mission and vision and the board's priorities.
Great. Thank you. I don't see any other board comments.
Okay. I have one more thing.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Does career technical education fit into this? It seems to me a great way to remove barriers.
Yes, absolutely. And same thing, looking at CTE courses that are being offered and student participation in those courses and making sure that we're making every effort to get students into those courses. Absolutely.
I noticed there was an expansion of funds for CTE, and good thing.
Thanks. And just for the public's information, SPSA are the site plans, the specific site plans. And what we're talking about here is incorporating an equity goal into each individual school site plan. And so when we talk about SPSA, that's what we're talking about.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Item 10.03, Science Camp, three-year proposal. Dr. Prater?
Yes, thank you very much. Ms. Dawson, can you share my slide deck, please? Thank you. When we closed down our schools in March of 2020, there were some tremendous impacts, not just in our local school community, but specifically many of our parents found that their personal situations were very, very much compromised. And one of the things that I worried about losing was the experience of our outdoor science camps at the culmination of our elementary years. And it's a wonderful experience. I know all of you are aware of it, and it's a tradition in many ways. It's not perfect, but it's a really fantastic opportunity for students to learn about themselves, be out in nature, learn to cooperate with one another, and learn science by being out in the wilderness. And so our schools, all of our elementary schools participate. Now, one of the things that we've done over the past two decades has been we have created a funding structure where the parents through PTA or the parent leaders, they raise the money for those trips. And it's anywhere from $300 to $500 per family, per child, to be able to go on these trips. And they're fabulous. You can imagine kids packing up their sleeping bag and their backpacks, and the teachers in the classroom build upon their science lessons through the year. And it's a really wonderful experience for our kids. Some of our kids, even though we live in one of the most beautiful places on the planet, there are students in our district that have never been to the ocean. There are students in our district that have never gone camping and or have gone on a wonderful hike in hundreds of opportunities that are out there, not far from our schools. So this opportunity does feel very important to me. And when COVID occurred and we did shut down our schools for an 18-month period, one of the things I did not want to lose and what I didn't want to do is have our parents absorb the burden of raising that kind of money to allow their students to go on this trip this coming year. I knew we would reopen our schools. We have done so. Yeah, there are some challenges associated with it, as all of you know, but we're doing it. And our kids are thriving 3 weeks in. They're smiling, they're laughing, they're there. One of the things that I know, though, is many of our families are still getting on their feet financially. They're still trying to reconstruct their lives. And so one of the things I wanted to do today was talk to you about some of the background. So prior to COVID, as I mentioned, all of our elementary schools did this work. There are locations at Yosemite, Rancho Alegre, Catalina. There's an Astro Camp down in the south, as well as Camp Ocean Pines. There are others as well. The funding falls on parents, typically through PTA. And our parents are amazing historically. They've raised plenty of money. I've had three sons go through the same experience, and typically what happens are our parents they don't just pay for their own child, they contribute beyond that. And I just didn't want to do that to our parent community this year, and I wanted to find a way to build our capacity as an organization, honor this important experience for our kids, and find a more equitable solution, a more sustainable solution. So if I could go to the next slide, Mandy. So I put together what I'm calling a three-year district contribution using COVID dollars. And one of the strategies here is it's a scaffolding model. So it's scalable. So my proposal to you this evening is that we would, in this year, cover 100% of the cost of the camp. And that would be anchored to the Rancho Alegre camp cost for a four-night, five-day trip. And I calculated in the cost of the camp as well as the cost of the buses and any related staffing costs. So it's approximately $500 per child across the district in sixth grade in the city and fifth grade on the coast to make sure our kids have that experience without it falling on the shoulders of parents. This is going to be very helpful for our PTAs who work their tails off, and they're really constructing their budgets right now, and they're trying to find out how to best approach this. And then in 2022-2023, I'm proposing we cut that in half. So the district would effectively subsidize 50% of that cost at approximately $250 per student. And then in 23-24, it would go down to $125 per student. So effectively 100% to 50% to 25% over a three-year plan. Could you go to the next slide, Mandy? And so the thinking behind that is that gives our parent organizations time to really think through budgeting and think through their way of approaching this issue. Now, what I can tell you is not all schools in our district are created equally from a financial capacity, the ability to raise money. So as a result of that, through the years, some elementary schools would go to the top tier Yosemite camp. And then others would go to Yosemite, but it would be a lower tier camp based on the capacity of parents to raise the money. And some schools went to Morrow State Park because they got a great deal on it and they had a ball. It was great, but it really struck me as an inequitable solution. And I'm here before you today because I'm proposing that we do this three-year plan. Allow our parents to catch their breath and get on their feet again. And then in the meantime, this year, moving into next year, I will create a committee, perhaps not a task force, but a committee. And now on that committee, I would make it representative. I'd find ways to make it where there are student, staff, parent voices, as well as including our foundation, to really look at this, not just as it is, but what it could be. And that's why I want to buy myself a little bit of time to figure this out. Because I think once we roll up our sleeves and look at this, I think we're going to discover that there are really creative ways that we can do this without it falling on our parents' shoulders entirely. And to make it more sustainable and fair across. So a sixth grader or a fifth grader on the coast should not hear through the grapevine that another one of his peers across town had this great experience and he didn't, or she didn't. And I think it's important as a school board and as superintendent that we create and we identify those barriers, we identify those inequities, and we tackle it head on. This buys us time. And that's what I'm here for tonight, is to use those COVID funds. They're one-time dollars. In other words, I'm not asking you to commit ongoing funds forever and ever. What I am asking is to buy us time to allow our students to have this opportunity while we figure out a plan moving forward. And I intend to bring back that information to you in the year as well as the out year so that our parents can plan effectively, so our district can be proud at knowing that all kids have this great experience when they come through elementary. And as we move forward and towards this idea, I also think it really illuminates the importance of us appreciating and knowing our environment. And we live in a place where our students should really understand their impact on the world. And we can attach our climate resolution that we adopted a few years back. We could really dive into some other types of initiatives in our district that will illuminate ways in which our kids can be empowered to change the world for the better. And I believe that this outdoor education model, if done correctly, can facilitate and and open the eyes of our students so that when they grow into middle schoolers and high schoolers, that they can begin to see how they can improve our world and honor the environment that they're so blessed to be a part of. So for me, this proposal, and I think is there one more slide, Mandy? So in closing, this is a $500,000 plus request tonight using COVID one-time dollars, which I think is appropriate. It ties to an important experience for our kids. It would, without this model, it would fall on our parents, and it would fall on our parents in an unequal manner. Okay? And I think that's wrong. So for this, I believe over a 3-year period, this investment will allow us the time to improve the model, seek funding that could be outside of our general fund, and really look at ways we can make this an exciting and equitable program for all of our kids coming through elementary. So that's my proposal tonight to get your approval on this particular funding model, as well as establish a committee or task force with key stakeholders to really improve this model moving forward. So that's my proposal in front of you this evening.
So this is an action item, and I will go to the public. I do see that we have a Carissa Kluver who wishes to address the board. Are you there, Carissa?
I am.
Okay. Carissa, can you hang on a second? We'll get that timer up and we'll let you get started.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. You have 3 minutes beginning now.
Okay, I'm so grateful that this is being brought up. I am a parent of a Morabay High School student who was at Waywood and at Loam's previously, and I'm currently on staff at Del Mar. I think this is incredibly important. The year my son was at Baywood, we were in the PTA unable to raise the kind of funds that we needed to have all students go to Sea Pines, which was the science and exploration camp that was, and it was the only year in between several years that we were able to provide that, and we just didn't have the funds. And it was heartbreaking, and it is such an enormous imposition on the parents that care so much at these Title I schools and do everything we can in the PTA to provide this. And Dr. Prater is absolutely correct that it's an undue burden, but also that it's something that we desperately want for these large numbers of children who aren't able to have this happening. And the idea that it is entirely falling on PTAs to meet this gap in equity is unacceptable. We do our best at our Title I schools as parents who have means, and it would mean everything to have the district provide support to make that gap meet the needs of every student. And I think that is absolutely necessary at the district level. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Carissa. I see we have Joyce Sent Singh. Joyce?
Hi. Okay.
3 minutes begins now.
Hi. I just want to quickly say I'm just in full support of this proposal as well, and I really thank Dr. Prater for this proposal. As a parent at Sinsheimer School, and I'm now the PTA president and trying to figure out how to fundraise after a difficult year learning virtually, and then also this year trying to figure out what we can and can't do this year, I just really appreciate this proposal and the idea that we look through this Science Camp Committee on how it could be more equitably done. So all students, all sixth graders and fifth graders have that equitable outdoor experience. So thank you. I'm in full support of the proposal.
Great. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing no one. Marilyn, I understand that you raised your hand.
I did. this has long been an issue for me, and I am so glad to see Dr. Prater bring it up. I fully support this proposal. It's for well over 20 years, we've had have and have not schools in terms of the ability to fundraise for this, which is really a culminating experience for fifth and sixth graders. It's an educational experience, and it's a coming of age experience. And I also had students at Baywood, and I know it was very difficult for us to come up with the money. And I've long wondered why some schools are going to Yosemite and some schools are going to Camp Ocean Pines. I don't know that those are exactly equal experiences. And I think in kids' eyes, they don't perceive them as equal experiences. So I really support this. I like the 3-year runway and the opportunity to come up with some good ideas. And I love the idea of having a committee that's got a diverse representation associated with it. So Dr. Prater, thank you very much for thinking about this and for bringing it forward to us tonight.
Well, I'm going to ask you, Marilyn, I know we have other people who would like to discuss it, but given what you just said, would you be interested in making a motion? And then we'll come
back. I would be delighted to make the motion when the opportunity, you know, presents itself.
I think Mark and then Evelyn and then Ellen.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. Thanks for those comments, Marilyn. Right on target. I agree 100%. I got to throw this out first, okay? I would like, if there's a committee, and I would just suggest this to that it actually have a deadline for making a decision. And my hope is that the deadline is this coming spring so that we can start funding this in the general fund and make this just a reality forever. Didn't hear all the rationale behind it. I was kind of like, whoa, what, this is going descending instead of ascending. And I was like, oh. I didn't get the COVID funding part of it. So it's limited funds. I have to say that this is probably one of the best uses of COVID funds that I've seen. It's just great. The other thing I would like to suggest is that as the committee meets, they somehow can factor in the benefits of funding the entire school, to the whole educational experience. It'll be better for kids, they'll be more excited about going into classes. It'll be better for staff because they'll have less need to push the kids. There's cost savings involved with this. So I don't think it's just here's some money. I think it's going to have a long lasting effect throughout their high school experience. So I will wait, see what my other board members have to say, but I support Marilyn's comments 100% and brilliant idea. Thank you.
Okay. Evelyn?
Thank you. I too support this for several reasons. And it just reminds me years ago, long before I was a part of the district did fund sixth grade culminating camps at all the schools. And at one time, our Title I schools were able to go to schools, you know, camps like Catalina. And so, you know, that concept of haves and have-nots across sites really didn't exist. And when kids got to middle school and they joined, you know, hands, they had that shared experience of, oh, you went to Catalina, you went to Yosemite. And so it was kind of a shared bonding kind of experience. And it wasn't, you went to this school, so you must have gone to this camp. So I think it's the community has also expressed a huge interest in outdoor education. And that's been across, you know, all of our feedback forms from both students and parents. And I think, thinking about best use of COVID funds, it ties in with that social emotional and also, science curriculum standards that could really be built in. So I really appreciate this being brought forward. And it just takes me back to really when the district was able to embrace it for all sites. And it really was a great experience for all our students. Thank you.
Helen?
Thank you. As Dr. Prater knows, this has been something I've spoken with him about as a former PTA president for a few years at a Title I school. We had a great deal of difficulty raising the funding. There was one year when the kids at that school went to Rancho El Choro for a day and to Camp Ocean Pines for a day because that was all that the school was able to raise. Later, one of my kids was a counselor, a camp counselor through the high school would recruit kids, students to serve as counselors with the sixth grade trips. And it was a different school she was a counselor for, not a Title I school. They went to Rancho Alegre for a week, and she talked about what a hugely different experience that was and why wasn't she able to do that and why were these kids able to do this. And, you know, it really brought it, it had already been brought home with me with making our best efforts to support through the fundraising efforts on top of everything else we were trying to do. And then to hear that from her a few years later. So, but I do have a couple questions. I wholeheartedly support this. Does this mean that all students from all schools will attend Rancho Alegre? Sounds like that's what it means, but I wanted to confirm that.
No, that's not what this is.
Okay.
This was just an anchor point of cost. Rancho Alegre for a full week.
Oh, I see. So that is, your, okay.
That's what I anchored the cost to.
So there could still be a disparity of where people go.
Yeah. So what I would like to, I want to share my thinking with you. I kind of did this on my own. And here's what I know is each of our schools, many of our schools have kind of come up with their own favorite place.
Right.
I didn't want to step into that right away. I'd rather have the committee look at all the different things that we're currently doing rather than me putting a proposal before you that might prove to be upsetting to tradition of a school that I'm unaware of. So really what this is it's a premium program, Rancho Alegre. It's, if I were to equate it to a vehicle, it would be like a Lexus, I would say. It's like a nice vehicle. So that $500 per child will serve the PTAs and the principals at the sites well when they come together to decide on where they want to take their kids this year. I will put that committee together to then identify here are the things that we believe are equivalent. Now that would be a different statement than saying everyone's going to go to Rancho Alegre. One of the comments that was brought up to me inside cabinet when I shared this proposal a while ago was from Mr. Block, actually, who was at Bishop's Peak as a principal for years. And he said, well, if you make everyone go to one place, you're very, very likely going to be unable to get everyone in the district to go because they fill up. So we have to open up our net wider in order to really make sure kids get the best opportunities possible. We have to plan early. So so to answer that question, no, we're not saying you have to go to that camp.
Okay.
But we are saying we're going to fund a pretty substantial premium within a camp experience for our PTAs and our principals to figure out.
So then another question I have, and I don't want to sound too cynical, but I'm just a little about some of this. So this means across the board, we'll give $500 per student this first year or that. So then if a school says, well, we're going to raise an additional $500 per student and we're going to really kick it up 10 notches. Mm. How does that eliminate? All we're doing is setting a baseline. And it still seems to smack somewhat of the potential for some inequities with this.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I've thought of that as well. We will, once I get our committee together, there's no camps going on right now. I think that's a true statement. There might, There may be one because that was pre-planned, but it's a little bit shaky because of our COVID numbers. But what I believe will happen is we'll come up with a reasonable set of criteria to make sure that doesn't, what you just described doesn't happen. So we'll put some bumpers around the edges to make sure that that doesn't happen. My experience is that won't happen. I think if we, I know all the parent leaders quite well, and I know the principals obviously very well, and we'll make sure that this is done properly and those types of things don't happen. One of my bigger concerns, quite frankly, is Rancho Alegre burnt down.
Right.
And when I called, I basically got a thank you for calling, but we're closed.
I think it's something else now.
And it may be.
When I've driven by there, it flooded and then it burned.
Yeah. So our camps in California are experiencing quite a lot of trouble. And so one of the things you could probably expect from me is a scenario where this year might be very difficult for our kids, for our PTAs and our principals to find a camp that's open and can accommodate. So that's why I bring 40 to you now, so that they can start looking into this and really start securing dates and places. What I believe is that some of our kiddos may not get that experience this year if we can't get a handle on COVID, if we can't find camps of considerable quality, like we're proposing here tonight, that are available, that are open. So, I want you to know we're gonna try our best, and I may come back to you in the spring and say, you know what, this cohort of kids won't have this experience, and it's a shame because we'll have another conversation. And so the committee is going to tackle some tough themes and some alternatives in the event this year becomes an issue for this cohort. So there will be a number of those, plus criteria. We're looking at everything. So it'll be a robust conversation, I can guarantee you that, within the committee. And I plan on putting that together in the coming weeks. I want to meet with our parent leader group. It's the end of this month, I believe. And I will explain this more thoroughly, and I will ask for involvement. And I will reach out and wide to make sure that we have lots of perspectives. Okay?
Thank you. Yeah. And again, just as someone who went through this personally in that role and watched it over the years, I really support this. It was a definite struggle. Thank you.
Yes.
I see, Marilyn, you have your hand up again.
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, Dr. Prater, you may be right that in this year, students may be denied this wonderful opportunity, as students were denied graduation during COVID. I mean, we've had kids have really suffered some loss. And I hope it doesn't happen, but it may happen. So I just hope for the best on that. But I, for one, am really going to hold you to your word that, you know, you will put bumpers around the way this works out, so that the $500 or the $250 or whatever the district's contribution might be going forward won't just be considered seed money, and then schools that have a greater ability will be going for the Mercedes SUV when schools of parents have lesser ability are going for a lesser vehicle, if we're using a vehicle analogy.
Yeah, Mrs. Roger, you can count on me. I won't let that happen.
Thank you.
All right. Mark, did you have another comment? Because I've got something I was going to add.
No, go for it.
No, I was just going to say I support this as well. Yes, in fact, you were not exaggerating when you were talking about one of the schools setting up their own camping trip, I think overnight for possibly two nights at Morro Bay State Park, setting it up, the teachers and the parents supplying the tents – trying to get sleeping bags, all that kind of stuff. So we know that there are inequities out there, and I trust that this is one way that we can try to address those. Let's see. All right. Marilyn, I know other people probably wanted to, but I went to you and suggested that you might want to make the motion. Are you still interested in doing that?
Right, I am. Although I don't, on this computer, I'm not seeing what the agenda item number is, but I will move support for the superintendent's recommendation to use COVID funding in this year and the following 2 years to offset science camp and creation of a committee to look at how science camp can be funded in the future.
Okay.
How's that?
Sure.
Poor Mrs. Dawson. That's an awful lot.
It's 10 point.
Write whatever you want.
10.03.
Move approval.
And I believe, Mark, are you raising your hand to second it? Or
I'd like to second this. I have to say, as the past district PTA president, this is just such a good move on our part, but it also exemplifies what's going on across the county. So I'd love to second Marilyn's motion.
Okay, great. Right. So
thank you.
We have a motion and a second to approve item 10.03. That's the 3-year proposal to fund science camp for our students. Okay. I'll take it back to a vote. Marilyn?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Catherine? Evelyn? Ellen? Eve? And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. Usually at this point, I would call for a little recess. However, we are moving through the agenda quite nicely. And I think the next item is our unaudited actuals. I'm not sure that there'll be a lot of discussion about them. But in an effort to kind of get us home a little bit earlier, let's move on to item numbers 10.04. And just to, if anybody in the room does need to take a break, I would just invite you to go take a break on your own right now. Okay, this is 10.04. This is approval of unaudited year-end actual financial statements. That would be Mr. Pinkerton, and I'll bet you Ms. Zeckland again.
Yeah. Mandy, can I share? So for the public and for the board to know, unaudited actuals is it's the end of the budget cycle for us. It's when you actually know how much came in revenues and how much you actually expended, right? So up until that point, it's kind of a guessing game as you go through. As a basic aid school district in particular, it's tough, right? Because, you know, most school districts in June, when the board passes a budget, they know approximately what they're going to get per student, right? And they're able to build their budget and base it off of that. We, as a basic aid school district, don't know that information until November of each year. So the board approves a budget in June, and it's not six months later that we actually know if our revenue projection was correct or not. So, you know, through that phase, first interim, second interim, of course, we make adjustments, changes, bring those things to the board for approval. But this really is kind of that end of the year culmination. This is what we have, and it's real. So the past 3 years on the 10-year budget, which I'll be reviewing after Ms. Eklund goes through the unaudited actuals, are actual, you know, revenues and expenditures, right? And so we'll, without any further ado, Ms. Eklund, I'll have you go through the unaudited actuals.
Okay, great. Okay, so just going through this first page, we're looking at our total revenues we're talking about our general fund budget. Our total revenues came in $7,638,69 higher than what we projected at estimated actuals. And a large portion of that was due to COVID funding we received late in May. The governor had put in for the expanded learning opportunity funds in his May revise, and those funds came in late May and June, so they're going to be carried over into the next fiscal year. and will be spent in part of, that's part of the 3-year plan Ryan's talked about several times. Also, local revenues came in a little bit higher, and that is due to the Diablo SB 1090 funds being allocated. We were under the impression that each year they would be allocating roughly $2.4 million for the next 3 years. However, they did a payment in September of 2020, and then they did a payment at the end of June in 2021. And that payment would probably be reflected for the 21-22 year. So it'll be carried over into 21-22. Can you scroll down to the expenditure chart, please? So we have our expenditures, our estimated actuals compared to our unaudited actuals and where those came in. Salaries for certificated staff, classified, and benefits were just slightly higher than we anticipated. It was really hard to determine where our hourly and substitute costs would finally come in with having a high time card volume last year with the pods and with a lot of support help. So we came in a little bit higher there. However, books and supplies, we did not spend nearly what we thought we would. Again, a large portion of that is COVID funding, but also with issues within the just the supply chain and getting certain products in before June 30th, that did not occur. So we will be expecting to receive those in July. And so those the savings that you see here will be expended in the 21-22 budget. Under equipment, there's $124,000. That was a bus we were hoping to get by June 30th, but it was expected to be received in July. So again, some of this got pushed into the next fiscal year. Down a little further. Then we review our net increase to the fund balance. We had $5.9 million that went towards our fund balance at the end of 2021, so we did not deficit spend. A large portion, again, was COVID funding for the expanded learning opportunity. We had some restricted instructional materials left over, Medi-Cal billing, and that was roughly what made up a big chunk of the $5.9 million. Then we had some unrestricted funding left over, and some of those major areas were lottery, Education Protection Act, and site and department carryover that will be allocated out in the 21-22 budget, and you'll see those adjustments at First Interim. We also made a transfer into Fund 40, our capital projects fund, from Fund 01 for $1.5 million to cover some capital projects in 21-22 and on in the future. And so that here is a comparison of estimated actuals, unaudited actuals, and the budget. And you can kind of see where we are with that. I believe that at First Interim, you'll see a increase in salaries for certificate and classified. At budget development, we were not done with all of the hiring that we've been doing to support COVID, so expect to see an increase there. And carryover will also be budgeted. So you're going to see the expenses go up a little bit, and you'll see where we carried some of those COVID funds over. Into 21-22, you'll see the fund balance kind of reduced by that as the expenditures go up. So that's kind of an overview of this. Is there any questions so far from anyone?
Questions for Mr. Buckman?
Sure. Again, Katie, thanks for the time you spent with me today. It's going to cut down my questions tremendously. I just wanted to give a shout out to Ryan and his staff. Every year, Ryan and I have a question about projecting a 3% increase. And I have to say, let me just go back up here. This, the very first little chart where it talks about property taxes, and you were like maybe $300,000 off at a gazillion dollars that's raised. So I just, congratulations, because that's an amazing feat. I just also, at some point, and I don't know if the rest of the board is with me on this, I'd love to see the numbers without the COVID dollars in there. I don't know if that's easy or not, but this budget is kind of like totally wacky with that money in there. So I don't know if that can happen or not. And then just lastly, in the slide that's up there right now, Katie, there's a line called flexible resources.
Down a little further, right?
Yeah,
right there.
I'm not sure I've ever seen that before, but it certainly popped out this time. So if you could just explain what that is, please.
Absolutely. So flexible resources comes from in 12-13, districts used to have many different categorical programs, and the state rolled all of those programs into LCFF, or as a basic aid district, it's the minimum state guarantee. San Luis Coastal made a decision back then to take their instructional materials realignment and adult ed and hold the intent of those programs, keep the funding there, and every year they draw down a little bit from this funding that was left at 2012-13. So, for example, adult ed every year, $75,000 gets drawn down from that amount and transferred over to Fund 11, where the adult ed program is managed out of, and instructional materials and realignment. When there's instructional material needs, this allocation of funding is drawn down for that and used to continue to support instructional materials. It is flexible money. It could be used for any intent, but that was what the decision was years ago, was to keep that money for those purposes.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Other,
and thanks, Katie.
Other questions from board members? Yeah, I'm seeing none. I'll go to the public.
So before we go, Katie, can you just touch base really quick? So I'm going to go over the tenure too, Mr. Unger.
I was going to say, okay, Ryan.
But really Ryan, quick, if Katie can just go over the summary of other funds. So, right, so she described so far the general fund.
Right.
So we actually have other funds outside of the general fund in the school district. So,
and Mr. Pinkerton, to Mr. Buckman's question, Does the information he's asking for kind of show up on that 10-year budget projection?
A little bit, yeah. We'll go over that. It's a little more difficult. You know, it's easy to look at the revenues that we received. It's a little tougher to look at expenditures. So, but I think the 10-year may help with that okay, question.
Thank you. Maybe you can talk about that when we talk Absolutely. About the 10-year, please. Thank you.
Go ahead, Ms. Eklund.
Okay. So, like Ryan said, we did the general fund. So we have Fund 11, even in the 2021 year, that fund was able to have revenues of $741,000, which exceeded their expenditures of $612,000. So they contributed to their fund balance, bringing it from $217,000 to $345,000. Aaron did a fabulous job in food services. Even with all of the pantry boxes and staffing costs, she ended the year with a very healthy fund balance that she has plans for to spend down in this year. We will have a one-year grace period to kind of get through all of those funds, because we are only allowed to have a certain percentage carried forward each year. And then the Fund 21, that is the bond fund. That's where all the building expenditures come out. You can see that there's $56 million left in that. A couple other funds is a Fund 25. That is our developer fees. So we had $3.5 million worth of developer fees for 2021. So the building is still strong out there, and we have $2 million left. We used $1.9 million to do some projects at Slo High. But developer fees can be used for campuses that are growing in in enrollment. So those funds were used at the Slo High School. And we have Fund 40. You can see that's where the $1.5 million was brought in for future capital outlay. And then the last fund, 73, is the foundation's fund. And that is used, expended by the foundation for scholarships and such.
That's the Mabel Ruth Haller.
Yes.
Morro Bay High School Foundation. And so Fund 51 is kind of a weird one. That's where the money comes in for the bond measure to pay back the bond measure, Measure D. So it's really kind of run through the county in terms of taking money in and sending that out.
Ryan, two things. So thinking about the developer fees, mm-hmm. since Morro Bay High has shown an enrollment increase of about 50 students, I think. Didn't they go from about 850 to about 900 students, something like that? So is there a time period when you have to demonstrate increased enrollment in order to use developer fees on projects at schools? And this may, you know, that additional students may be an anomaly.
Yeah. You know, we do our annual developer fee report to the board. We also do a 5-year projection with that. And so a lot of that's based on kind of looking out 5 years. So we wouldn't necessarily make adjustments based on kind of 1 year, you know, a change. But if that was something that was consistent, then absolutely.
Okay.
And we have seen a consistent increase in students at San Luis Obispo High School.
And then just the other thing is, I think if you could just explain to the public how important Fund 20 is and why we have Fund 20, because I think this is an employee protection fund.
Yeah. So basically, if Fund 20 is when employees retire up until they receive Medicare, so age 65, they're able to access our district benefits. So it's really something that is money that's set aside for employees after they retire until they're able to get on Medicare. And then the thing that really stands out is really food service, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, normally we are putting money into food service every year. So, but because of the pantry boxes, because of the food service staff and Aaron Primer and what they were able to do, right? So it's kind of a win-win. Not only did we get more in reimbursements from the state and federal government, but we also were able to deliver a great product to our students and our families, right? So, I mean, that is one that really stands out. Those funds, like Katie said, have to be used for food service. So we, and with free lunches, free breakfast, free supper, for the really looks like the next 3 years, I'm expecting food service really to do well. I mean, we are seeing a lot of kids access that program. So, that's exciting. We actually have Salute Carb Hall coming in 2 weeks to talk about it and look at what we're doing as a school district, right? So it really is awesome. And so what we're going to really be looking at using those funds for is fixing up our kitchens. So fixing up equipment, doing things in our kitchen so that we can deliver a better product to our kids and do some scratch baking at sites and do other things to really make those breakfast and lunch even better than what they are now. So, that was kind of an unexpected, you know, kind of benefit of what we did last year. And we do have a lot with that, I will say, too. You know, we're our food service staff, we've had to extend all their hours. We've had to do all kinds of things this year, hire more staff to keep up with, you know, a lot of what's happening at our school sites and kids accessing the meals. So all positive things on that front. So those are kind of the key things in terms of the general fund. So if we want to stop, we can answer questions that we have for Katie sure. and myself on this, and then we'll go back to the 10-year budget afterwards, if that's okay, Mr. Trump.
Well, why don't we go to see if there are any other board questions? You can do the final report on the 10-year budget.
Okay.
Then we'll go to the public because this is an action item.
Perfect.
And then we'll take it back to the board for vote.
Sounds good.
Okay. Questions from the board, Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, thanks. Just two quick questions that have come up to mind. When you were just talking about the Fund 73, I thought I heard that this was just Morro Bay High School.
It was just Morro Bay High School.
Okay. And then I'm just wondering, I know that there's a lot of competition out there for staff, and Fund 20, is that something that you would normally see in a school district? I don't remember. Is that something special that we have?
I mean, we fund it. You know, most school districts, basically it's year-to-year funding in terms of that. So the fact that we have, you know, a large amount in Fund 20 is fantastic.
Okay.
So it's unlike most school districts in the state.
So for all those prospective teachers out there, all that are out there, you need to understand how much we care about it.
Yes.
Thanks.
And I believe that it's an accounting requirement. I believe it was Gatsby 45,
yes.
It not? Where school districts are required to put this money away. Few school districts do, which I think imperils their employees, and that's something that
we've done, and I'm really proud of the fact that you've done that, put that money aside. Ellen?
Yeah, I just, this is my usual thing. I know it'll show up some in the 10-year budget, but again, the COVID money is short-term.
You're going to hear me loud and clear.
One-time money that will go away.
Yes.
So we shouldn't become too used to it. It's not going to be part of our ongoing budget. So just everybody. Thank you.
You'll see it when we review the 10-year, but it's really crazy times.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we, again, 2 years ago, the world was ending, right? And LCFF was going to, school districts were going to lose 10% of their LCFF, and all of these things were going to happen. And then, you know, deferrals and payments. And then COVID hit. And it was like, but, you know, you would think that a pandemic would hurt the budget. But in actuality, it has brought more funding to school sites over the past 2 years. So, and, you know, we have our ESSER 3 plan, which I'll be reviewing after this budget presentation as well, to kind of talk about those COVID dollars and what the board has kind of prioritized them for up to this point.
Marilyn, you have your hand up?
I did. Only because Mr. Buckman raised it, I wanted to take the opportunity to explain about the private purpose trust for Morro Bay High School. That is, and for other board members who may be unaware, Miss Vertholler, I don't know her first name, was a classified employee at Morro Bay High School. And when she passed, she left this sizable bequest to Morro Bay High School for scholarships for Morro Bay students. And so I don't know who administers this trust, if we do or if there's a third-party administrator, but the money is, I'm assuming, and maybe Mr. Pinkerton can confirm this for me, are we just in giving $30,000 worth of scholarships? Are we just spending the interest in maintaining the corpus of the trust?
So a couple of things with this scholarship. Yes, it was focused on Morro Bay High School. Mrs. Werthaler set it up. Part of the you know, the process in setting up was we had to put this in a separate fund outside the general fund. That was part of taking the funds. This had to be set up. The scholarships are given out by the school site. So they have a scholarship committee that goes through each year and picks students to receive the funds. It's a 4-year scholarship, so the kids receive it for 4 years. They have to prove that they're in college and that they've, you know, sustained those types of things as it goes through. Part of the other part of this grant too was that it was to be spent down.
Oh, okay.
Part of her wishes were, you know, it does earn interest, as you can see, $14,000, but it was not supposed to be just, you know, only spend the interest that's there. No, she specifically wanted it to be an ongoing scholarship. So if we're going to do $30,000, it should be $30,000 every single year that we give out to kids and move forward. And if we spend it down, we spend it down. But that was kind of her wishes. So we've maintained both of those things, that it's in a separate fund outside the general fund, and that we continue to, you know, kind of set that same bar in terms of scholarships. She didn't want it limited to just the interest.
It's a very wonderful bequest.
It is. San Luis Obispo High School has other scholarships too, that they give to students and have it that's run through the school and through the Career Center there. But those didn't have to, you know, part of the requirements for taking the funds did not have to set up a separate fund like we see with this one. So I don't want you to think that there's not other funds going to SLO High students or to other students in the district.
Oh, we know that there are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Pinkerton, do you want to talk to us about the 10-year budget?
Sure. So, you know, really quick, I just want to show you something for the board, right? And so this is, you know, when I first came into this position, we would see this chart often. It's catching up right now, but we would see this chart where at estimated actuals in June, you know, we expected to have a $2,359,000 deficit. And then if you look and see what happened at unaudited actuals, it was quite different. right, in terms of where we ended the year with our overall expenditures and revenues. And so I bring this up because that is why we created this other document, the 10-year budget, right, which in a lot of ways, again, it is a projection. So we are taking some liberties, right, with what we think and what's going to come in. But I think it has served, hopefully, for the board to get a much better view of what the real budget will look like into the future, right? So in particular, if you look at the revenues on this and to kind of talk about Mrs. Sheffer's point, you're going to see some big categories that are very different, right? So again, the column 18-19, the column 19-20, and the column 20-21 are actuals that we absolutely know for sure is what we took in revenues and what we expended. Everything else on this chart is a projection. Now, it's based on whatever facts we know, how much ESSER money we're going to receive, how many COVID dollars we're going to receive. But a lot of it is also just based on kind of what it's been in the past. You know, again, 3% property tax for out years. That could happen for the next 8 years, or there could be a housing recession. So, you know, there could be a worldwide depression. So something could happen, right? And we change these projections each year based on where we're at, you know, kind of in it, our economy and where we're at as a county and as a school district, what we know. So kind of key things I'll just kind of run through. So 21-22, right? You know, property taxes, again, you know, we've seen excellent growth of property taxes over the past few years. More than the decline in Diablo Canyon revenue in some ways, right? Because of the building that is happening, in particular in San Luis Obispo, and the high cost of housing. So as people are buying and selling houses, housing is being, you know, basically reassessed at those points, right? So the district is seeing the benefits of those things. Is that sustainable long term? Will it happen forever? I don't know, right? But those are things that, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we did not project that it would be that way. But we've adjusted our property taxes because of that. As you go through, you'll see some kind of big differences, right? In particular, you look at the federal funds. And so when Ms. Sheffer talks about these one-time dollars, yeah, we received $6.7 million, right? And then, you know, projecting $7.5 million in 21-22 in terms of our CARES Act ESSER, which is going to be what we talked about at the next board item. So after that, those dollars go away. So we, and all the extra things that we're doing for kids and things that we've accomplished with the LCAP, which we'll talk about, really, we're trying to make those dollars last as long as possible. We spent most of the CARES Act funds this year that we received this year. So between pods and all of the masks and supplies that we ordered for COVID and the heating and ventilation system upgrades throughout the district, right? I mean, on and on the things that we did to get kids back into schools in March. And really, with our special education students throughout the year, kept them in. Extra staffing. We had a virtual learning program, right, outside of our normal school program. We hired staff for, I mean, just on and on the things that we did this year to really deliver education through the worst of times with COVID. As we go through, you'll see the state funds as well, right? You'll see some state COVID funds there. So this year we received this $2.9 million, which is, again, fantastic. And some of that, of course, will follow over into this year and help us. Hopefully over the next 3 years. So these are kind of the big things that I'm just, you know, showing the board in terms of overall revenues, right? The biggest impact on revenues is right up here, and that's the property taxes, 3%. You see it goes from 81 to 53 million this year. And if it continues on that 3% realm,